just wanted to welcome everyone to today's internet webcast titled Startup Funding Opportunities. As I said, my name is Andrea Leeson. I will be moderating today's session. I just wanted to cover a couple of logistical issues before we get on and while we wait for others to get onto the system. When you registered for the seminar, you did come to the front page of today's seminar with the specific URL that was sent to you. And the front page of the webcast has a short overview of today's session, and we've also included a bio sketch for today's presenter. Please note that the presenter's email address as well as mine are hot linked on that page if you do have any questions for us after today's presentation. And also, if you see the link for links to additional resources at the bottom of the page, under that you'll find a link to the FY09 Startup Solicitation. For those of you joining us via the phone lines, please put your phone on mute for the seminar. We'll have a Q&A session at the end, at which point you're welcome to take your phone off mute and ask the question. If you don't have a mute button on the phone, then if you could at this time hit *6 to place your phone on mute. When you get to a question, if you need to ask one, you can hit #6 to unmute the phone. And this really helps to cut down on background noise during the seminar. Also, just wanted to note, please.
Final welcome.
Has joined the conference.
Please don't put us.
Add white time.
Has joined the conference.
Please don't put us on hold during the seminar. Most, as you know, most background or organizations have
founder of church.
Has joined the conference.
Or advertisements that can be very disruptive. Again, keep it on mute, but not on hold. By now, all of you should have clicked on the Go to Seminar icon and be on slide number one of the presentation. This main page contains slides, and there you will find the navigation icons. You can submit questions by hitting the question mark icon you'll see above. Don't need to wait until the Q&A period to submit your questions. In fact, please submit your questions in advance of the Q&A session if you have any. If you have any technical difficulties with the audio stream, you can also use the question mark icon to let us know about those difficulties. And, if you can include a telephone number where you can be reached, and we'll try to help you troubleshoot the problem. The presenter will be announcing the number of the slide on which when he moves forward, and you may advance to the next slide using the single right arrow located above the slide or by clicking on the slide number in the left-hand frame. I also wanted to mention that today's session will be archived, both the audio and the supporting material, in case you'd like to refer to them in the future. So at this point, I think we're ready to kick off this session. Today's speaker is Brad from Certus. Brad is the Executive Director of the Strategic Environmental Research and Development Program, which funds the development of environmental technologies. Prior to joining Certus,
Earl DuPont, Fox Ridge Marketing.
Has joined the conference.
Prior to joining CERTA, Brad spent 24 years in the Navy as an oceanographer, meteorologist, retiring as a captain. His military career included a tour on an oceanographic survey ship, forecasting weather at McMurdo Station, Antarctica, and aboard the aircraft carrier USS John F. Kennedy, and as the commanding officer of the Naval Polar Oceanography Center. And then before I turn over to Brad, let me remind you again, please, please, please put your phones on mute. If you don't have a mute button, hit *6 now. And then to unmute, you can hit #6. And again, please do not put us on hold. Thank you. Brad?
Hello?
Yes?
Sorry, I'm on mute.
Okay. Brad, I think you can go ahead.
Okay, thanks, Andrew. And Brad Smith, I'm the Executive Director. And I'm going to talk a little bit first about the background of CERTIP, and we're going to talk about the process we use.
Ridge Marketing here.
Okay, if you could put the phone on mute, and we'll go ahead with the presentation.
Okay, and then we'll talk about the FY09 solicitation itself. There is one spot in the presentation where I will stop and take questions, because it's when we get to the end of the process section, because there are almost always when we give this presentation, there's questions, and it's easier to deal with them right then rather than to press on. So we're going to move to slide 2. And just a little bit of background, there are two major programs that are the Department of Defense's corporate environmental technology program. CERTIF is one of them. The other one is the Environmental Security Technology Certification Program, or ESTCP. We're not going to be talking about ESTCP today. That will be done in January sometime after their solicitation comes out. I only mention it because we operate both programs out of the same office, and as you'll see a little bit later, they are part of the continuum from basic research on through demonstration and validation, with CERTIF being really the basic and applied research portion of that. If you move on to slide 3, CERTIF is kind of unusual in that it is, in fact, a statutory program. It was established by the Defense Authorization Act in 1991. The purposes that are listed on the slide come directly out of the statute itself. We really focus on the first one, and that is to address the high priority environmental issues of DOD and congruent issues in DOE. And we say congruent issues in DOE, the Department of Energy, because we don't do any work dealing with radioactive substances. That is really the domain within the Department of Energy, but the Department of Energy does have other environmental issues very similar to the Department of Defense. The statute also laid out a series of organizations and procedures, including the CERTIF Council. My job is the Executive Director and the Scientific Advisory Board, and we'll talk about them in a little more detail. If you move on to slide 4, this is just to show where we sit in the continuum of basic research all the way through commercialization of new technologies. Our requirements come from the Army, Navy, and Air Force, and in fact, the CERTIF program does not own any infrastructure. We don't own any laboratories. We don't have any, beyond our staff here, we don't have any organization like the services do. So our requirements come from them. It is our job in life to respond to them as well as requirements from the Department of Energy. As you see here, the next, what that says S&T, that's science and technology. That's where CERTIF fits, basic applied research and advanced development. At the bottom, the alphabet soup is the bottom, is the organizations that we work for. The CERTIF program works for the Director of Defense Research and Engineering and the Deputy Undersecretary of Defense for Science and Technology, whereas our partner program here, ESTCP, works for the Deputy Undersecretary for Installation and Environment and takes demonstration validation and moves on to commercialization. So the bottom line is that, again, we are from very basic research up through proof of principle, brass board. We do not take mature technologies and demonstrate them. That's ESTCP's job. Our job is to develop technologies. Moving on to slide 5. Again, for our basic organization, the statute laid out the CERTIF Council, which is made up of members of DOD, DOE, and EPA, because we are a joint program of those three agencies. It also lays out the Scientific Advisory Board, which is made up of 14 members who come from a mixture of industry, academia, and there are a few also federal people on the board. There are two other organizations that are important in the process that are not statutory, but are something that developed over the years. One is the Executive Working Group. The Executive Working Group is the working level mirror image of the CERTIF Council. So for every member on the CERTIF Council, there's a member of the Executive Working Group. And if you are from a federal agency, it's important to you because that is your venue through which you get to us, is through your Executive Working Group member. We also have CERTIF Technical Committees, which are rough images of the CERTIF Council, and they are our extended staff. The staff here at the CERTIF and ESTC program office is very small. We deal with a very, very broad range of technologies, and so for each of our focus areas, we have one of these technical committees. They are made up of technical people from the federal government, predominantly from DOD, DOE, and EPA, but there are some members from other agencies, and they have provided us the technical guidance and staff. And we will talk about their role in a little more detail a little bit later. Moving on to slide 6. The Department of Defense views its environmental drivers in two very broad categories. The first of those broad categories is sustainability of ranges and a range operations. We own a tremendous amount of land in every ecosystem that exists within the continental United States, actually within the United States, not just the continental United States. And those lands are exceptionally important to us. And in fact, most of you know that we have lost a number of those bases through the BRAC process. So sustaining the bases that we do have is vitally important. There are a large number of environmental issues that are facing each and every one of our ranges. Some of them are listed here. This is not all of them, but they range from issues with marine mammals to threatened endangered species to noise to toxic air emissions and dust emissions, as well as encroachment and growth and, of course, unexploded ordnance. If you move to slide 7, the second broad category of environmental driver that we have within the department we share with almost every industrial organization out there. The Department of Defense is the world's largest industrial organization, and like every industrial organization that's been around over the last century or two, we did some things that weren't exactly environmentally benign. And as a result of that, we have contamination in the ground in a variety of places. So the second major driver is reduction of current and future liabilities. Our current liabilities come almost exclusively from past practices, and that in particular areas with chlorinated solvents, of course, unexploded ordnance, and we also have areas of new and emerging contaminants that we have just become aware of. One of them is perchlorate, which has become an issue in the last 5 years. The second half of that is the future liabilities, and that's dealing with really the pollution prevention side of the business, where we are looking at getting all of the toxic and hazardous materials out of our weapon systems and platforms, and looking at all of those things in a life cycle cost viewpoint to reduce not only our future liabilities, but also to reduce the potential for contamination of our personnel. Moving on to slide 8, based on those drivers, we have divided the program into 4 focus areas, and there's always, when you do this, a certain amount of arbitrariness to this. But the 4 focus areas are munition management, where we deal with all the unexploded ordnance issues, environmental restoration, which is more classical cleanup of existing contamination. Weapon systems and platforms is where the bulk of our pollution prevention and compliance work happens. And sustainable infrastructure has 3 subsets. One is our natural resource management, second is cultural resources management, and the third is facilities management. Moving on to the next slide, this is just a quick snapshot of where our budget is and has been over the last couple years. And as you can see, we have grown over the last couple years, which is actually within the federal government and environmental program that grows is unusual, but that's just for a baseline. There, in FY08, we are just shy of $70 million. Moving on to slide 10, I'm going to take some time in this because this is the solicitation process that you need to go through in order to submit a proposal to us. There are 2 segments to this. One is for the private sector, and the other is for the federal sector. First of all, we solicit for a specific set of statements of needs, or SONs, and it is the sort of technical committees that develop those statements of need. Those, again, come from the requirements that come from the services, as well as requirements that come from DOE. The statements of need are identical for both the private sector and the federal sector. So I'm going to walk through this, starting with the private sector, which is at the top, and the BA, that's a broad agency announcement, that's the method by which the federal government solicits for research. That BA went out on the 8th of November this year and is currently on the street. For the private sector side, we ask that the initial response to the BA be in terms of a pre-proposal. This is a 5-page white paper that discusses what you're going to do, what the science is behind what you're planning on doing, how it addresses the statement of need, as well as a ballpark idea of what the costs are. We went to this because we know it costs a lot of money for people to develop proposals, and so therefore this is a way by which you can get a quick read from us as to whether or not your proposal is going to be competitive.
And this is Andrea, Lisa. We had one question that came in very specific on the pre-proposal, so perhaps it might be a good time to answer this. And the question is, how much detail is needed for the budget at the pre-proposal stage, and should pre-proposal budgets use the same template as required for the draft stage? And I assume that means the full proposal stage.
The detail that you need in the budget is not as specific as you need for the full proposal, because, quite frankly, when we send back comments on the pre-proposal, we frequently will suggest changes to the pre-proposal, sometimes cutting things, sometimes adding things. So what we need is a ballpark figure. If you send in a pre-proposal and the full proposal comes in three times what was in the pre-proposal, that's probably not going to be very well received. But if you're within probably 10 or 20% of what the final cost is going to be, that's going to be close enough. So you don't need to develop very, very detailed and specific budgets here, because, quite frankly, we're looking at these pre-proposals to see whether or not we can be competitive against everything that we've gotten in. So those pre-proposals come in. They go through a staff review internally, and that staff review is augmented by other federal people who are experts in the area who help us do that. And then we do a down select, and basically we look at those pre-proposals to say, among the group that we've gotten in against the statement of need, is this going to be competitive against the other ones? Because we don't want to put somebody through the cost and expense of developing a full-blown proposal if the idea and the technology that they're proposing is not going to be competitive. So we go and take about a month. So in early February, for the pre-proposal due in early January, in early February we will send out request for people to submit full proposals. And I've got some statistics on the OH solicitation a little later on to give you an idea where that breaks out. So we request those full proposals. Those full proposals are then due in March when they are required to come in. Well, I'll tell you that from the private sector side, the only way you can submit a full proposal to us is through the pre-proposal process. Full proposals that are received at the March deadline that have not gone through the pre-proposal process will be rejected. So be very clear about that. So that's how you get to the full proposal. They go to peer review. At this point, I'm going to jump down to the federal sector side with this. And that is that on the federal sector side, the solicitation goes out through a call to members of the executive working group. Now, there are members from DOD, DOE, and EPA on the executive working group. We limit each one of those executive working group members to submitting two full proposals against each statement of need. So each of our partner agencies have to do an internal down select, similar to what we do on the pre-proposal side. How they manage that internal down select is their own choice. We do not dictate that to them. I do know that some of them do use a pre-proposal process very similar to ours. Some of them do not. It is their choice. For those of you who may be listening to this who are not, or are federal agency members who are not members from DOD, DOE, or EPA, there is a venue by which you can submit. One of the EWG members from the Office of Secretary of Defense has been designated as the recipient of full proposals in from those agencies. And that is listed on the website, who that is. So those full proposals, from there they all go to peer review together. There, from this point on, there is no distinguishing whether a proposal came from the federal sector or from the private sector. When they come out of peer review, we do, again, an internal staff review of the peer review comments, and just to reduce the workload on our technical committee members, we send them what we call the top band. In any type of a solicitation and review process, you always get pretty much three bands within proposals that come in. And those that are clearly competitive, those that are clearly that are not competitive, and those that are in the middle. Again, to reduce the workload, we send forward to our review committee just those proposals in that top band, the ones that are clearly competitive. Now, every one of our members of our technical committees have access to the abstracts from all of the other proposals that come in, and they can request that anybody, any one of them can request that a proposal that they're interested in can be brought up to be fully reviewed by the technical committees. So from the peer review, they get the top band gets sent to the certified technical committees. These are the people who do the initial rack and stack of all of the proposals in a 1-to-N priority order for funding. I give each of them an allotted amount of money that's available for new starts each year, and then they select the proposals to fill that amount of money, and generally a few extras that if additional funds become available that are selected for funding. They make those recommendations to me. It goes through our technical director, who then sends those on to me, and I am the final source selection authority on this. I tell you that I take the recommendations of our SDCs about 99% of the time. Every once in a while, they will recommend something for funding that we don't believe is appropriate. But they are the people who really do the bulk of the selection process. From there, after they've been selected by me, by statute, they need to go through the Scientific Advisory Board for review. Those reviews take place in September and October time frames. Once they've been through the SAB review, the entire program is assembled together, is put in front of the Executive Working Group for approval. Upon their approval, it goes to the CERTIF Council for approval. The CERTIF Council approval is required because one of the oddities of the statute is that the authority to expend money is actually vested in the CERTIF Council. It's not vested in the Secretary of Defense or the Secretary of Energy or the Administrator of the EPA. So that's the basic process. And this is the point in the brief where I'm going to stop and take questions on this process because I know it's unusual. There's nothing else like it that I'm aware of in the federal government. So if you have questions at this point, feel free to ask them.
Brad, we had one question online. This is Andrea Leeson, somewhat related to this. The question is it necessary for all or at least a portion of the research to be conducted at a DOD facility?
That's a good question. And the answer is no. Is not required. The other question we get sometimes is it required to have a DOD or a federal partner? The answer to that is no. We are interested in the best technologies that we can develop and doesn't require to do that. Now, some of these things obviously are going to make more sense to happen on military bases, but it is not required at all that the work be done on a military facility. The other thing I want to mention here at this point, which that triggered my thought, is that we do allow partnerships between federal sector and private sector organizations. In fact, we encourage that. So you can have a university as a lead that has a federal laboratory as a partner. We also allow that lead to change, where you can have a federal laboratory as the lead and a private company or a university as a partner. Obviously, whoever is the lead, it makes a difference in how you come through the process. It is your choice. For example, you can have a private company that is the lead organization that has a federal partner. They would come through the BAA process. Or you can have the federal entity be the lead with either university or private company or both as partners, and they would come through the EWG.
Has joined the conference.
They can come through the EWG process at the end. The only thing I will tell you is don't do it both ways. Okay? If you send it in both ways, the first thing we're going to do is call you and ask you which way do you want it to be considered. So don't try to burn a candle at both ends. Okay. Are there any other questions?
We had, this is Andrea Leeson. There was one submitted online. I think you just answered it, but maybe for clarification, I'll go ahead and state it. It says, the question is, you mentioned that there is a process for non-executive working group federal agencies to submit full proposals. May they also submit pre-proposals?
No, because on the federal side, we only take full proposals in that those members from Interior or Agriculture or wherever you may be coming from, you need to submit a full proposal directly. There is not a full a pre-proposal process for that. Because the pre-proposal process that happens, for example, within the Department of Energy is run by the Department of Energy. We don't have anything to do at all with monitoring that or operating that. It is their own internal process. As far as we're concerned, people from the federal sector send us full proposals directly.
This is Andrea Leeson again. Another question is, how long does the approval process take? For example, if a proposal was submitted in November 2007 and is selected, when would funds be available to start the project?
Okay. First of all, the submission for pre-proposals happens in January. Submissions of full proposals happens in March. We generally have all of the decisions made by the end, well, by the middle of July, normally. Sometimes as early as the end of June. That's when the awards are made. But then because we have to go through the process, because this proposal that's out there right now is for FY09 money, which doesn't happen, actually doesn't start till the 1st of October. Now, the reality of that is, even though that the federal fiscal year starts on the 1st of October, we generally don't get our money in-house until about this time of year. In fact, we have just received our FY08 money this week. So, if you're a federal sector entity, you can expect to get your funding in January because it takes us some time to do the paperwork to push it out the door. If you're a private sector, in business or academia, you need to go through the contracting process, and that takes some time. And it varies, but normally we have most of those contracts let by the March-April time frame. Sometimes it takes longer, but generally it's because there's some difficulty with getting all of the paperwork in place, getting the audits in place or things like that. So the answer to the question is, for this solicitation, which is the FY09 solicitation, if you're a federal agency, you can expect to get your money in January of 09. If you're a private sector agency, you're looking at generally in the March-April time frame of 2009. Okay, any other questions?
Does Zorroni work at DOD facilities, right?
Does not require to be at a DOD facility. Is
okay.
Not.
This is Andrea. Another question online was, is there a pre-proposal for the seed funding? If so, when?
Okay. There is, part of the solicitation is the seed solicitation, which is a small amount. It's very similar to SBIR, but without a lot of the baggage that comes with SBIR. This year, the limit is $150,000. It's 1 year. These are to be really blue sky, proof of principle, 1 year projects, and there is no pre-proposal process for that. It is just full proposals that come in, and they are due in March also. Any other questions?
This is Andrea again. Let me go ahead and ask this one. I am with Cultural Resources Program at Fort Bragg DOD. Are you saying that no pre-proposal is necessary for an application from this office?
You're going to have to check with the Army EWG members, and we can get that for you if you actually, I think they're on the website, but I can't remember if they may not be. But the Army may require a pre-proposal. I don't know. But, again, we limit the Army to two full proposals against each statement of need. And so how they do the down select is I don't know. So you'll need to check with them, and we can provide you with the information of who to contact.
I think this question fits in. This is Andrea again. What is the lifespan of the funding provided to approved proposals?
If projects run generally from 1 to 5 years in length, and I'll probably get this question again, there is no caps to the amount of funding that we have, but nominally our projects run from about $100,000 a year upwards of $800,000 or $900,000, rarely over $1 million a year. Again, there is no cap. The bottom line is in any given year, we have about $15 to $18 million of New Start money. We generally have between 20 and 24 statements of need. So to be realistic, if you come in with a $3 million a year proposal, your odds are slim and none.
This is Andrea again. One of the questions online says, one of the four characteristics of the startup proposal should be that, in quotes, it is catalytic in causing the initiation, organization, or acceleration of other essential research. Please elaborate.
One of the things that CERTIF does is that because we deal with issues that span across the bulk of the services, we have a tendency to tackle issues that are too expensive for any one of the services to take on by themselves. And so in that sense, we act as a catalyst to bring not only our money together, but frequently other money together and a variety of researchers across the board to address a major problem. Do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, but I think that covers it.
Okay.
Here.
All right. That's all for the online questions. Anybody else on the telephone? Okay. So we're going to move on. Slide 11, these are the selection criteria. The first one is a pass-fail criteria. It's relevance, and it's basically, does this proposal address the statement of need? I know that sounds like a very simplistic thing, but in any given year, we probably reject close to 3 proposals because they do not address the statement of need. We've got somebody out there who does not have their phone on mute. I'm hearing it. Would you, whoever, please check and make sure your phones are muted. Again, it's star six to mute your phone. So this pass-fail relevance is key. And again, your pre-proposal has to address the statement of need. Now, in any given year, we have between 5 and 20 pre-proposals that come in where they put the wrong statement of need on their cover sheet. We don't disqualify you. We just move you into the right category. And that was just a typo. So, you know, you're not at risk just because you happened to type the wrong statement of need in on your sheet when you submitted it. So once you get past the pass-fail, there are 5 selection criteria. These are listed in the order of importance, technical merit. Transition potential is, hey, you know, this is a really neat technology, but can DOD or DOE use it? And surprisingly enough, you know, it makes a difference. Personnel, cost, and cooperative development. Cooperative development is, in fact, is this a partnered program? Is there additional monies coming to it from other places? And when I say that, again, it is not a requirement to have additional money coming in. It's nice if we see it, but actually a very small percentage of our programs actually bring additional money to the table. But this is, you know, have you involved as much of the community as you can? Our peer review only looks at 2 of these 5. The peer review looks at technical merit and personnel. The CERTIF technical committees look at all 5 of these. Moving on to slide 12, I'm going to give you some statistics on the fiscal year 2008 solicitation. So moving on to slide 13, this is a breakout of how things winnowed down. I will tell you right up front that 2008 was a little bit unusual year for us in the way.
Green Building Solutions and Supplies
has joined the conference.
Okay, would you please mute your phone, whoever just joined us? We're on slide 13.
We're muting.
Okay. Again, if you don't have a mute on your phone, star 6 will do it. So we got, last year we got 199 pre-proposals in under the BAA. This breakout between education and business is unusual. Normally we get more from the academia than we do from the business community, but again, for whatever reason, it happened that year. And again, the federal pre-proposals went through their agency selection. Out of that 199 pre-proposals that we had come in, we asked for 83 full proposals to be submitted from the private sector side, and the federal sector submitted 98 full proposals for a total of 181. When they went through peer review, that and the reduction from the total amount to the top band, it dropped from 181 to 95 full proposals that went through the SDC review. And then from that 95, 49 of those are selected. So basically about half of the top band proposals that go to the SDC for review wind up being selected for funding. So that's the statistics for FY 2008. Every year is a little bit different. The other thing I want to mention here, too, is that, is that when you look at the breakout between federal education and business, these are not preset percentages. This is a full and open competition. It falls out however it falls out, and it changes every year.
Brad, this is Andrea. I just wanted to state there was a question online about what percent of proposals get funded, so I think going through this slide that question is answered,
right.
But if not, please follow up with another question.
Yeah, this is pretty, and this is, as far as percentage of things that get funded, this is pretty typical. What's a little unusual about 2008 was the breakout between business, academia, and the federal sector. Slide 14. We had 54 seed proposals that came in. Again, this breakout varies dramatically every year depending on what the statements of need are because we have very few statements of need. In 2008, we only had two statements of need that were seed statements of need. So this is how it came out. Slide 15, out of that, we selected 8 seed proposals for funding. And again, this is just the breakout, and again, the breakout between the three major groups varies dramatically from year to year based on the topics for the seed statements of need. Moving on to page 16, this is just a breakout of our budget for 2008. We actually had appropriated with $69,674,000. We got it. $800,000 add by the Congress. This is the breakout among the four focus areas that we have. And just for your information. Okay. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit about the solicitation for fiscal year 2009. This is the one that was coming up. Moving on to slide 18. Again, for the core solicitation, the dates are the response to the broad agency announcement, pre-proposals due on January 8th. We will be shooting for getting all the requests for proposals out on the 1st of February. This is sort of a function of how many we get. If we get much more than 200, this may be a little bit later because it takes time to read them all, and I do actually read every one of them. Full proposals are then due on March the 6th. For the response to the call for proposals from the Executive Working Group, those full proposals are due on the same date, March the 6th, and each of the EWG members will have to, each members of the services and organizations will have to look at to your own EWG member to see what they needed internally. Seed solicitation is going off at the same time. All the proposals
Earl, New Pulp, Fox Ridge Marketing.
Has left the conference.
All the seed proposals are due on March the 6th. Again, all the details are listed on our website at www.certup.org/funding. Now, what you're going to see next are a slide for each of the areas listing the titles of the statements of need for each of the focus areas. I'm not going to go through these in great detail because the descriptions of these are in great detail on the website. But I am going to tell you a couple of things. We have people who call us frequently and say, I've read your statement of need, now what are you really looking for? And the answer to that question is, read the solicitation. Okay? We do not do a bidders conference, and we do not accept telephone calls or visits from people who want to come in and talk about it. And the reason for that is very simple. The staff here is very small. It's myself, the technical director, and four program managers. And the rules of competition are, is if we let anybody come in to discuss these things, we have to talk to everybody who calls or wants to visit. And we simply don't have the time to do that. Because in addition to running the solicitation, we have about 300 active projects ongoing right now. So we're very busy. So please don't call. Now, having said that, when you read the statement of need, and you have a question that is not pertinent to what are you really looking for, but there's something about the statement of need you don't understand or you want to find about the limit, it is okay. Actually, it's better if you email us with those questions. Writing statements of need is an art form. We know that, and sometimes we don't always get it right. And so what happens is we get people who ask questions, and when the question comes in, if it's something that was said, gee, we probably should have been more clear about that, what we will do is we will put up a frequently asked question. There is a whole group of frequently asked questions about the process in general on the website, but we put up one specifically. So far for the solicitation, we have three frequently asked questions that have, or three questions that came in that we felt were significant enough that we put up frequently asked questions about that. For example, we have one, a statement of need in here dealing with the removal of coding systems from aircraft, and the question was, well, what specific coding systems are you looking for? And so we thought that was an appropriate question, so if you go to the website now, it should be posted by now, this just came up last week, there will be a frequently asked question that asks that and identifies what coding systems we're interested in. So don't be afraid to ask questions where you're looking for clarification, but don't call and say, what are you looking for?
Brad, this is Andrea Lees, and along those lines, we had about five questions submitted early this morning that I think are probably relevant here, and they basically all asked about, are there opportunities for a specific type of research? For example, one says, are there opportunities for research funding for green initiatives such as research on carbon sequestration alternatives, green roofs, energy conservation, et cetera.
And right. And the answer is yes and no. Okay. The answer is yes, that we are interested in those areas. You have to look at the statements of need. This year we don't particularly have anything in energy. We had a statement of need in energy conservation last year. In the future, we are almost assuredly going to start looking at issues of climate change, potentially carbon sequestration. But for this year, the only thing we have in climate change, we have a statement of need looking at the impacts on sea level rise. So that, and I had scanned these before also. One of the things, some of the questions that came in seemed to indicate they were looking for money to look for a research project at individual and specific sites. The role of CERTA is to develop technologies and tools that are broadly applicable. Our role is not to fix a problem at a particular installation or at a particular site. So,
has left the conference.
In many cases, the sort of research questions that we have here are things that the answer is not really. Is there anything else in there?
No, not right now.
Okay. So on slides 19, 20, 21, and 22 are the titles of the statements of need for FY09, and again, I'm not going to go through those in any detail at all, except to say that they are there, and that you need to read the descriptions of those statements of need on the website. looking at slide 23, again, this is something the hallmarks of a competitive proposal. The first and most important one is that it clearly addresses the statement of needs. And again, I said in the pre-proposal process, we probably reject 20% of the pre-proposals because they don't address the statement of need. The other thing is that the science behind what you're going to do has to be well described. And so that we have a sense that you as a proposer understand the science there and that the science is solid. For those of you who are small businesses, frequently we will get in pre-proposals from small businesses where they are reticent to describe the technology or describe the science for fear that we will steal it. I understand the problems that small businesses go through, but I will tell you that we handle proprietary information and data on a daily basis, and in fact, if anybody in our office here ever let that out, that is a criminal offense. It is part of our contract with the government to be government employees that we uphold those rules for the sanctity of proprietary information. So you don't have to worry about that. But I will tell you that if you are not willing to describe the technology and science behind it, your odds of getting funded are very slim. Also, it is best if you have hypothesis-driven work where you have a clear and concise statement of what the issue is that you're dealing with, and then a clear explanation of how your project is going to answer that question. Also, that the bulk of the proposal should be in a technical approach, with particular design detail on the experimental design and description of methods and techniques that you're going to use. Frequently, we get proposals in where the technical background that describes all of the science behind it eats up 80% of it. And then when you get to the technical approach, it says something very, very shallow about, and then we're going to fix this problem. But we really need to know what it is that you're going to do. And clearly you have thought about what it is you're going to do and how you're going to do it, or else you would not have any ability to price this out.
Has left the conference.
So those are the hallmarks of a competitive proposal. Moving on to slide 24. This is just our website where you can find the all of the solicitation information and data. And then on slide 25, again, I want to thank you very much for joining us. We had a good response today. This is the first time we have done this through the CLUIA, and I also like to thank very much the folks at EPA, ITO office, for allowing us to do this, and I'll take any questions you may have.
This is Andrea Lisa, and we did have some questions online, so let me just run through them, Brad. First one is, I represent a watershed association in southeast Pennsylvania. We are a 501c nonprofit organization. I was wondering if watershed associations can enter into partnerships with educational institutions to attain this funding for specific research needs.
Absolutely. We actually don't limit anybody. We've had state agencies get funding from us. We've had not-for-profit organizations get funding from us. Again, we are looking for the best technology that we can find out there, and we don't care how you partner or who you partner with, or you don't even need to partner at all if you have the technical capability in-house.
Okay, another question is, how can Department of Defense agencies submit requirements to be addressed by statement of needs in future years?
Those requirements, there is a formal requirements process that is run through the Office of Secretary of Defense, but knowing that frequently people who are in the field are not aware of that, the other way to do it is to through the Cert Technical Committee members. And if you are a Department of Defense individual, you can contact us and we'll tell you who your representative is. Each one of the services has a representative on each of the Cert Technical Committees, and that is the route by which you come in. We do not take solicitations for ideas for statements of need directly.
Next question, how many non-U.S. projects will be funded?
Again, it all depends on what the solicitation competition comes out. We do fund foreign projects, but again, it's based on competition. We do not have any preset percentages on that at all.
Next question. Does CERTIT maintain examples of previously selected proposals online for reference purposes?
We have one-page descriptions of every project we've ever funded online. It's under research tab on the website. Now, that doesn't, again, those are one-page descriptions, but they do all have a listing of the principal investigator and how to contact them. We do not keep copies of successful proposals online because, again, those are really the proposals are between us and the principal investigators. It's not for public dissemination.
Next question. Does the proposal review process grant more credits if proposals aim to fulfill multiple bullets in the statements of need, for example, sea level and climate change, et cetera?
Not necessarily. In fact, we permit everything from the soup to nuts proposal that addresses all aspects of the statement of need to very small ones that address only a small portion of it. Generally, what we were looking at here is when we look at proposals that come in is what are the people who are proposing it most qualified to do? And in many cases, we have statements of need that are very broad that you would need to put together a very large team to address it all. So my advice to you is to address those parts of the statement of need or all if you have the capability in which you have the most capacity to produce the best results.
Next question. Do the page limits on the pre-proposal include citations?
No, it does not. And it does not include short bios either.
Last question. It would be helpful to have information about the federal working group contacts and present this in an integrated fashion with a CERTIT process or post it clearly on the website.
Okay, I'm going to read that again. Yeah, this is a problem that we have, quite frankly, it's something that is out of our hands because the DOD policy is that we do not list names and contacts of anybody on the websites at all, which is why if you look on there, you will see links to our program managers and links to me, the email, and it'll be executivedirector@certup.org. That is nothing more than a pass-through right to my email, but and you'll notice that even as the executive director, my name is not on there anywhere. Again, that is DOD policy post-September 11th. Prior to September 11th, we did have all those contacts listed on there, and we're not permitted to anymore. It's unfortunate, but those are the rules that we have to live with. So, again, if you need those contacts, you can contact us through the emails that are listed there, and we'll get them for you. And that's the last of our online questions. Are there any questions that we have out there?
Hello, Brad?
Yeah.
Is there any limit to the number of proposals that can be submitted by any one organization?
No, there is not. Actually, let me put this way. Beyond, I'm assuming you're non-federal. Because there is a limit to how many each EWG member can limit. But if you are from academia or from industry, there is no limit to the number of proposals that you can submit.
And so I should introduce myself, Mike Wong, Rice University. So if I were interested in submitting a seed proposal or and a regular pre-proposal to one or more, then there's no problem with that.
Right, no problem with that at all.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, if there's no other questions, I just wanted to thank you for attending this seminar today. And as stated earlier, under the links to additional resources, you'll also find a link to the FY09 CERTIT solicitation In addition, the audio and the supporting materials will be archived for future reference on the CLUIN website. Associated with the links page is an online feedback form, and we do ask that you consider filling out the online feedback form, since we will look at the comments as we try to improve the content and delivery mechanisms for the seminar. Thank you very much.